Hi, I'm Christina.
And I'm Z.
We've worked in insights on both the supplier and brand sides.
And we've worked for software suppliers to the industry.
And we've been friends for a few years now and love geeking out over research topics.
Every couple of weeks, we chat about topics in market research and insights here on MR Explorer.
So Z, are you ready for today's episode?
Sure am. Let's do this.
Hi Z, how are you?
Oh, you know, hanging in there. It's the beginning of fall. And of course, that means in the Puget Sound, we're going to have a string of hot days because it's actually still summer here.
Because it's actually, well, you know, because technically summer just started in the Pacific Northwest, and we only get 3 days of it, so it's fine.
It's true.
It's fine. It's okay. I agree with you. I also don't know how, I mean, you just said summer is going to start, and I feel like I vomited in my mouth a little bit. I just don't know how that happened. I didn't understand how it was already August, and now it's already September, but you know, such is the time in a global pandemic.
It's true. These are the things that happen. But one of the things that is coming back up is the podcast.
The podcast. It's been a little while. We took a summer off. We took a little bit of a hiatus, which I think was good. It allowed, I feel like, space to breathe. It allowed us to breathe. We have a lot of really good plans coming up, which is nice. But I think, you know, it was a good opportunity for voices that have needed to been heard for a long time to have the opportunity to get out. Yep. And they still do need to be heard, but hopefully we can also be a space for them to shine.
Totally. Totally. So, you know, the whole name of the podcast, MR Explorer, one of the things that we had talked about was actually talking about different types of research. Because market research is just so broad. There's just so much about it. And what I would like to do is I'm going to borrow a term from my friend Ryan Berry, and let's just riff on it for a little bit. Let's just throw out different types of research that we've heard about, maybe a little something about what we understand about it, if anything, because I, for one, know that I have heard of a lot of types of research that I still am like, sounds cool, no idea what that is or how it works or what goes into it, just that someone somewhere does that kind of research. So why don't we just take turns and each of us will just throw out one or two, and then they'll bounce to the other person to throw out one or two, and we'll just keep going back and forth till we exhaust ideas. How does that sound?
Sounds pretty good. I think this is going to be a good way to just get out into the universe what we know, open the opportunity for folks to get in touch with us, let us know if we're missing anything gigantic. And then in future episodes, I think what it allows us to do is, you know, pick our top 4 to 5 types of research that, you know, we've mentioned here or have heard from others in the time, and really dig deep and talk about what those different kinds of research are. I know, like we've definitely talked about before, I'm a little earlier in career than you are, and I've only been exposed and heard of a very specific set of research. Yep. And I think how this could be helpful for someone listening to this podcast in this series that we're going to be doing, talking about these different types of research, is really opening allowing the other early in career market researchers to really start to learn about these other types of research that they can then go off on their own and start to get experience in, or even start as they're learning about or trying to figure out their next steps in their career, what kind of research sounds interesting to them.
Totally.
So I think this is a great way to do
that. Yeah. Yeah, and I would argue that even people who are mid-career, later career, there are still tons of types of research that they probably haven't heard of, haven't been exposed to, haven't had the opportunity to play around in, right? I spent nearly 20 years in business-to-business research, mostly focused on satisfaction research. That was my world. That was what I operated in. That's what I did. I knew about other types of research, specifically in the business-to-consumer space, but it wasn't like I necessarily did any of it until my most recent role, where I've been exposed to it more and I have just spent the past year learning. And I find myself on a regular basis still learning more about different types of research that I haven't done before or that I haven't even heard of before. So mm-hmm. I think this will be really cool because there are some types of research that I think have been around for a while, but maybe not understood as well, and others that are a bit more novel that, you know, just mm-hmm. in the past few years, this type of methodology has come up or this type of research has come up. So
mm-hmm. maybe we should determine the difference between research, types of research, and methodologies. Like, are we talking even a difference of qual and quant? Are we talking a difference of DCMs versus focus groups, or are we talking more in general? I think where I am thinking that we're going is more general ad or campaign research versus maybe a B2B research versus a B2C research or innovative research, or like really kind of what different types, what are we kind of qualifying as types of research?
I was actually thinking more along the lines of like a focus group versus a max diff or a brand tracker.
The methodologies.
Yeah, brand tracking versus a satisfaction survey or a loyalty survey kind of a thing.
Okay, let's do it. I think that's a good jumping off point.
All right. I
think we named four right there. So let's unpack max diff research. I think both of us have a similar amount of experience in max diff research in that we had very light exposure at one point in our lives to max diff, and honestly haven't done too much work in it since. But what do you know, like what kind of research or what kind of research questions do you think would best benefit from a max diff exercise?
That is a fantastic question. I can tell you that from my experience with Zappy, max diff methodology is one of the types that can be used for claims testing, for example. So the idea being the respondent sees like five different statements, and in a grid, they say, this is the one that resonates with me the most versus this is the one that resonates with me the least. And you just go through a series of those examples, and at the end, you're able to start to see nuances between what really resonated with people versus what didn't at all resonate with people. That's just one example that I'm familiar with for what max diff would be used for. But I don't know what you've heard about max diff or where or why it could be used.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is right along the lines of what I really understand is what is the most desired versus least desired of any pair of options presented to a respondent. I think when we're talking about max diff, I think we can create a bigger bucket of these more like advanced analytics or advanced choice modeling options mm-hmm. and include some DCMs and conjoint work in there as well.
Describe DCM. You've said it a couple of times. What does it stand for?
Yeah, so DCM is I believe it stands for decision choice model.
I've heard discrete choice model.
It could be discrete choice model.
Because I'm not sure.
Okay. I think it's discrete. I think you're right. But really, from what I understand, these exercises are best used for product planning and product feature testing. So what features are most important to a consumer? And included in that model could also be how much they would be willing to pay. So a willingness to pay and product, like feature prioritization, which comes in really handy when you are planning any kind of, it could be a B2B, it could be a B2C product planning, and you want to develop anyways, product planning. It could be great for product planning.
Yeah, okay. So I guess one of the things that I would love to explore, and this is something that definitely let's do a particular episode on, just kind of this advanced model kind of research, is you were talking about this conjoint, this DCM methodology as something that's used for product planning to figure out importance of features. I'd also mention MaxDiff being something that you could use to get feature importance, right? And one of the things that I would love to explore is, when would you use a MaxDiff versus when would you use a DCM? The other thing I want to explore is, there was a discussion that I was part of a while back, and it was about trying to program a conjoint type of study. And it turned out that depending who you talk to will be what they envision as a conjoint study. I had no idea that was the case. I thought conjoint was conjoint was conjoint. I didn't realize that people would describe it differently. So one of the things I would love to unpack in the future is DCM versus conjoint versus MaxDiff, because I feel like those are like a category all in their own. So what do you think? Is there anything you would add?
I think that's a great idea.
Would you add to that group?
I think not off the top of my head, but I'm sure there is another set. I think that those are really the three more advanced modeling, other than like path to purchase modeling and market, like mixed market modeling that folks do.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that mixed market modeling would be in the same kind of analytics bucket. I think it's
probably not, but I think you brought up two different types of research that I think we could also dive into a little bit, because I've heard of path to purchase, and I will admit I have always been interested in what is the difference between a path to purchase study versus a customer journey study.
That's a great question. I can't answer that. Is there a difference?
I have no idea. Wow. That's the thing. I have no idea. But I have heard about
I feel like I hear them interchanged, you know, and I think it would be really interesting to unpack, you know, this path to purchase, buyer journey, customer journey. What is the difference there? Like, is there really a difference between the buyer and the customer? Are those journeys the same? And then there's always, like, user experience studies that go right down into the depths of whatever you're talking about and whatever you're trying to research. So I think that's a lot to unpack, too. I think another interesting bucket could be this argument between a satisfaction versus a likelihood to recommend versus
net promoter score, like, in all its variations.
So I think we've got a couple of things. We've got PSAT scores, we've got CSAT scores, we've got NPS scores. When are they used? When are they valuable? When do you choose one over another? Do the business question, like, do they change based on a business question? Do they change based on desired outcome, or, you know, what the capabilities of an org or research group is to be able to address your, like, what they're going to give you. Like, I also think maybe we could include in there a debate on our very favorite traditional marketing funnel of when should you use your purchase funnel, when should you not use a purchase funnel, what is the debate again around the benefits of a purchase funnel.
Yeah. I was also thinking we could throw in trackers, right? Because a lot of that, so in my experience...
brand equity trackers.
Yeah. So there's CSAT, customer satisfaction, PSAT, product satisfaction. There's NPS, net promoter score, being used for loyalty measures or likelihood to recommend to someone. There's also just the idea that I feel like those three tend to be the things that end up in trackers mostly. And I have heard arguments about trackers dying. I have heard arguments about trackers will never die. I have also heard arguments of the reason trackers are dying is because they no longer serve our needs. But yet, there still needs to be some measure of satisfaction at some level. But this is where things get really hairy, right? Because it's like, you want to measure satisfaction at some level, but then it satisfaction for a customer at which stage of their journey? I have heard that. Like, how is a customer, what is the satisfaction at each stage of a customer journey? And then for trackers, and having worked on trackers before, how much variability should you expect in a tracker when it's been around for, you know, a bunch of years? How much should you worry about the amount of variability you might see? Like, at what point when you see a CSAT number start to go up or down, do you start to either rejoice or get really concerned? Right?
Well, so, I think that also, like, brings in a conversation of how often are you getting these numbers?
Totally.
So, like, how often are you fielding? What? Yeah. All of the things.
Yeah.
It seems like, and we're going to continue in our brainstorming session of different kinds of research, but it seems like the way that we are approaching this conversation is bucketing. We're bucketing all these different kinds of research into very specific buckets. And so we're going to continue to throw out some more methodologies and ways of doing market research, but this is an interesting way that we're starting this conversation. I just wanted to acknowledge. Something that go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say something that I would really like to chat about as we're kind of unpacking this is what I am seeing as almost like new and up and coming ways of doing research. And there are a lot of them out there, and some of them I know some things about, and some of them I know absolutely zero things other than the name. Yeah. And one of them, well, two of them in particular being social listening research, market research, and the other one being System One behavioral research. I would love to learn more about those. I am not an expert in either. I know proponents of System One research, but I don't know a ton about it. I know the basics about it, but I would love to know more about it in B2B and B2C research, in tech and CPG. I would just love to know. I know there are a lot of rich insights coming out of that. The other thing that I think it came to mind when we're talking about our trackers dying, but you have to measure satisfaction somehow, is the answer to that social listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
that's a really good question.
I think that there's a lot out there in the social universe that I think a lot of companies are starting to use, but there's likely a lot that is not being used, period, and maybe isn't being used to the depths that they could be being used to.
Yep, I totally agree. I know some of the arguments that I have heard about social listening and why I think it hasn't become a main pillar of research is the idea that the people who tend to be on social media are people who, there's a generalization that they are more outgoing, they're more willing to share their opinion, as well as if someone is sharing their opinion about a product or about a company, they're either super satisfied or they're super angry. And so you get very polarizing comments as opposed to having just run-of-the-mill, in the middle, like what you do with the middle lane kind of comments for social listening. I know I read into that when I was working with the tech audience because they were like, devs kind of aren't on the same social media everyone else is on, which I found really interesting because I'm friends with a number of developers. I can tell you that they are all on Facebook. They are on Twitter. Like, they use the same social media streams. They just don't, they're not going to go out and say on
they're
social media.
They're not posting on it. They're just consuming on it.
They're consuming on it. If they do post, it's probably not to do with work. It's probably something to do with personal, like most of the rest of us would do for our social presence, right? But I would love to dig into some of that nuance around social listening and even just why it's not taken on more of a, why it's not become a fixture in research as much as I think it should or could be. Another type that came to mind as you were talking about newer types of research is emotion tracking, eye tracking, all that tracking.
More neuro, like actual. I remember I was speaking with one company at one point and they were looking for someone with, and I think we can talk about this, I've already mentioned it once or twice, they were looking for someone with more experience in ad and campaign tracking, and I didn't have that, which is fine, but what they were specifically looking for was someone who had experience in this, like neuro tracking, like tapping respondents and tracking almost brain waves of how they were responding to specific points in TV advertising.
Yeah.
Which was so interesting. It was something that I had never been exposed to. It's something I never would have thought of. Yep. But I think that is just so, this is just so interesting.
Like it is.
Eye tracking, emotion tracking, neurotransmitting, like whatever kind of
facial tracking, right? Like facial coding, trying to do facial coding. The things that I have heard about neuro tracking and doing the full neuro cap and doing all that is, yes, it is so extremely precise. However, it's also so extremely expensive. I mean, just imagine the technology that you're having to use. It's not something that you can do remotely because you have an actual cap with the little dots around someone's head that they're having to use to be able to track this. The other thing I have heard is for facial coding, that there have been instances where it can mistype an emotion, right?
I was going to ask, like, something like facial coding brings in an ethics question of accessibility, and if you are, I guess, an ethical question of accessibility, and just we're not sure.
It also brings in a cultural question.
You never know.
It also brings in a cultural question, right? It brings in a number of different questions on, you know, sometimes you're looking at someone, they might look upset, and it turns out they're not upset, they're just thinking. There is someone who's smiling, but it's not because of what they're seeing, it's because of what they're thinking, because they have totally tuned out of whatever it is that they're looking at.
I'm not saying that that happens with us sometimes, but I'm saying that might happen with us sometimes. You go, can you repeat, or at least with, you know.
The best thing that I have ever
heard. Can you repeat what I've said?
Yeah, the best thing that I have ever heard in a meeting situation was someone who suddenly stops and goes, I'm sorry, I was multitasking. Can you tell me what I'm supposed to answer again?
You know what, though? That just means that that group of people had created an environment of comfort and they just felt free enough to just say, you know what? Not for me today. Today is just, it's not my day.
Yeah. But I would love to dig into some of those just because I have a sense that some of them work, some of them the tech is still being developed to get them to work.
And I would love to hear, actually, if we can even, like, have people on, have someone that works in this area speak with us. Because I'm sure that these ethical and cultural questions, if we're coming up with them, they have come
They've
up
been
with
asked.
Them. And there's, yeah, and so I would love to dig into that and hear how that part of the industry and technology is addressing those issues.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what about, I mean, we can chat retail, like in-person retail. I mean, there's so many different kinds of
mystery.
Oh my gosh, I just got overwhelmed. Mystery shopping. That's what I was gonna. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mystery shopping. There's just retail buying. Like, how are people in-person shopping?
Yep.
Diary. Like that brings up, like, when I was scoping research, when those, like, shop along studies.
Yeah.
Were going on, and they could all be done virtually of take a picture and do diary studies, you know,
over a
course of a couple of months. So,
or
oh my gosh, I just got overwhelmed.
Right?
Ethnographies,
but,
yes.
In-home ethnography, mobile ethnography, things that you can't really do right now. I mean, think about how the retail world has shifted because there are limitations on in-person shopping, and so there's so much more online shopping and how those things are tracked differently or measured differently. There's also the area of innovation testing, just that I feel like ad testing and innovation testing are two areas that I have been getting more involved in the past year, and innovation testing more than anything else. Because it's like everyone says that they have an answer for innovation testing, but there still is a lack of innovation in any space because everyone is looking for that breakthrough idea, but no one can figure out from any of the data what breakthrough means and how do you become breakthrough. And then I've been hearing about, like, optimization testing versus idea screening. So you, like, screen, and then you take a concept, and then you optimize the concept, and then you go and you do volumetrics forecasting on that. I mean, just all these terms that I have heard that I have just been like, what?
That's why I'm looking at you right now. I'm just, okay. I would write all of that down, but I don't know where I lost you, and I don't know where to start.
Let me tell you, it's a whole new world where research never ends in sight. Okay.
Oh, gosh.
That's enough.
That's enough. Oh, gosh. I think everyone just stopped. They were like, and this is it
and
for me.
You know, it's so interesting doing this exercise with you, though, because I still feel like we almost barely scratched the surface. And here's the funny thing. We did a ton of quant, and we didn't touch on qual. I think the only qual that we touched on was ethnography.
Yeah. Which I think, but I think we've also chatted about qual in previous episodes, just in the how are we adjusting to a new COVID world. So, like, I feel like even if we left out qual a little bit, we have chat a little bit, where like our friends can rewind a little bit and listen to some of our ideas of what we're doing to adjust for new qual work. Awesome. Well, do we feel like we have like at least a little bit to get started on, and then just start to open up our space on our Twitter, our email, if you know us in IRL, if you know us in real life, shoot us a note. Let us know if we're missing anything. My husband's going to be really happy that I tossed that one thing there. Then we can start to put together like a fun series of opportunities to dig deeper into each of these spaces.
Yeah, I think that'd be really awesome. It's like doing a 101 on each of these spaces. Just what are the types of research? What do they measure? When would you use them? I feel like even if we just stuck to those three questions, that is so much information to try to understand about, all the types of research that we do. I can't believe how many methodologies we threw out there.
I threw a lot out, but I also feel like we're going to get a lot of like, but you didn't mention like what you actually do, and I didn't mention what I actually do.
I know. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm. This is a lot to start with. But I feel like a 101 series is going to be really great. Not just for everyone else, but also for us. Like we were really honest in what we know things about, what we don't know things about.
I'm excited. This is going to be exploring. Great. Let's go explore, Christina. This is going to be fun.
Oh my gosh. I like it. It's my favorite thing when you're listening to something or watching something, and then they throw the name of the thing in, like in Home Alone, where he's like, oh my gosh, I'm home alone. And you go, oh my god, he said it. He said it. Okay, well, I will say I'm excited to dig a little bit deeper into these, and also... just for everyone out there, we do have some really interesting series coming up. We've brainstormed a lot of some fun content to come out with over the next, 6 to 10 months to a year. We've got a lot of stuff that is in the works, and I think we're really excited to just launch this podcast into some new directions. You'll hopefully hear some voices that aren't ours on this podcast. We're going to bring in some folks that have some expertise in different areas that can help offer perspectives in ways that we cannot, and in ways that we don't feel that it's our space to offer those perspectives. So yep. I'm excited. I'm very excited for what's coming.
I am too. I think this is going to be a really fun time.
Cool. Well, now we have to listen back to our last episode, though, because I feel like in one of the last episodes, we were like, this is how we should end our episodes. And I don't remember what that is.
I don't either. That's really funny.
I know. But I could be imagining anything else, like any other podcast I'm listening to.
I know for sure there was one podcast I listened to where the host was like, I think I'm going to play around with how I sign off.
Like, I don't know, should we just say, like, any, I don't know. It's fine. We'll get there. It's okay. But I'm excited for what's coming up for us, and I think we've got some good stuff on the horizon.
Yeah,
and I'm excited.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of MR Explorer with Christina Perkins and myself, Z Johnson. We look forward to sharing more with you in the future.